We continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. I have to play you this audio from Dennis Allen, the head football coach of the Saints. He was with SiriusXM NFL Radio, and Dennis Allen believes Derek Carr will have a lot of success this season. But listen up to how he referred to Derek Carr in this clip.
Derek brings some stability to that position. I think he's one of the better quarterbacks in our league. And I think getting him in really his most success came when he was with Gruden in Vegas. And that system is very similar to the style of offense that we play. And so I think that's going to be a great fit for us.
So most of that is coaches speak. But when you hear Dennis Allen say that Derek Carr is one of the better quarterbacks in our league, I just have to chuckle at it. Like, don't get me wrong. Derek Carr is a fine player. He's not great. He's not awful. There's times he looks like he could be a top 10 quarterback, but he's not an elite quarterback. He's really had like one season when you thought, okay, this is an elite quarterback. And it wasn't even his most impressive season. Because I give him credit. What he had to go through 2 years ago, it was insane how he was able to lead that team to the playoffs. But with the game on the line up against the Bengals, and that was a 50-50 game, couldn't find a way to get the ball in the end zone. So I look at Derek Carr, and here's really like the big misnomer. And don't get it twisted. The Raiders have been a disaster. But now he goes to the Saints, and everyone's like, it's new life for Derek Carr. He's going to this great organization. Well, pump the brakes here. Like, if Sean Payton was still there, yeah. If Michael Thomas was Michael Thomas of 4 years ago, yeah. If Alvin Kamara didn't have a legal situation, yeah. I could see that. But now, Carr going to this team, have a good defense. You have Chris Olave, who's a really good wide receiver. I don't know how many games Alvin Kamara is going to get suspended for. And then it's like, what do you have? Because every time someone tells me, oh, Michael Thomas, it's if he could be healthy. I'm surprised Michael Thomas is still on the Saints. So outside of winning the division, I have no expectations for the Saints. And they should be able to win the division, but they're not locked to do so. Right now, they would be my pick to win the division. It's not a big, bad, bold take. But outside of that, even in an NFC that's wide open, where there's really only two teams that you look at that are great right now, in Philly and then also the 49ers, it's right there for the taking. Like, we were talking about the NBA earlier in the Western Conference. Denver looks like a dominant team. The Suns look like they're trending towards being a dominant team. And then whoever's going to be that third team, whether you buy into the Grizzlies and the Kings, who are 2-3 right now, or maybe it's another team that's had to deal with injuries like the Warriors, the Lakers, the Clippers. It's very similar how we're going to talk about the NFC this year. It's the Eagles. It's the Niners, pending their QB situation, but they've been able to navigate that throughout the years. And then who's going to be that third team to emerge? And I just have a tough time seeing the Saints emerging as that third team where, yeah, they should win that division, but I never think, Hickey, we're going to view the Saints this year as a team where you go, oh my goodness gracious, I'm shaking in my boots because here comes the Saints marching into my stadium come playoff time.
That is absolutely correct. They're not going to impose fear on anyone come playoff time. If you are that wild card team, most likely in spot number 5, having to go into New Orleans, just like Dallas going to Tampa last year. It was a little different because it was Tom Brady and
the
Cowboys.
Well, Dallas better get the job done, all right?
But, yes, any team that's right now that first wild card
Minnesota,
is going to be probably lining
you,
up.
You better get the job done. Detroit, if that's you, you better get the job done. Because all three of those teams, Dallas, Detroit, Minnesota, even though they may or may not win their division, and let's operate that either the Lions or the Vikings win that division, and it's whoever doesn't, you know, is the 5 or the 6, and then Dallas is probably out of the 5 or 6, and I still lean Philadelphia wins that division, you better beat the Saints. Because the Cowboys, the Lions, the Vikings, on paper, Hickey, are just better teams than the Saints.
Absolutely. And like I said, even on paper right now with Michael Thomas healthy, with Alvin Kamara so far slated to play a full 17 games.
Michael Thomas healthy. Yeah, right now. Wake me up in September or wake me up in November when he's gone through the first 2 months of the
season.
Right,
with probably what? Ankle injury, foot injury, toe injury, any sort of ankle down injury he's going to suffer. So it's just like they don't really scare you now at full health, let alone come in the season. You can't trust him to be healthy. Like I said, it's outside of the winning the division, not high expectations at all.
Now, I always know it's coaches speak when someone goes, oh, yeah, we believe we have one of the better quarterbacks in our league. When you say that, how many quarterbacks do you kind of look at there? Like, what do you think the number is if you're going to make a claim like that to make it just be believable, passable? 10?
Yeah, I would say 10. Maybe like if you can be concretely at 11, you can say, oh, you know, there's, you could say you're just outside the top 10. You can maybe finagle it as to being, you know, right around the top 10 of a quarterback. I think that's passable if you're Dennis Allen. I think Derek Carr falls in that category, but that's where I would say that you are stretching past 10.
Okay. So let me just go through division by division right now. And there's no way that we could put Carr in the top 10. But I wonder how many quarterbacks I'm going to tell you that are outside the top 10, and then where do we have Carr? So, like, let's start with the AFC East. Josh Allen better. Assuming the Rodgers deal gets done with the Jets, Rodgers better. Tua, I'd rather have Carr than Tua right now because I know Carr will at least stay healthy. I do think there's more upside with Tua, but I can't bank on Tua staying healthy. Mac Jones, Carr's better. Joe Burrow with the Bengals, better. Lamar Jackson, let's just assume for now, even though I don't think that's safe to assume, he stays on the Ravens, he's better. Kenny Pickett, it's too early to call, but I would trust Kenny Pickett more for the next 5 years than Derek Carr, but you can't say right now that Kenny Pickett's better, so he's not in there yet. Deshaun Watson, even with the rust that he has to knock off, we know the Saints would rather have Deshaun Watson than Derek Carr. So just through two divisions so far, those are five quarterbacks. Allen, Rodgers, Burrow, Lamar, Watson. AFC South, the only one you could say is Trevor Lawrence. The AFC West, Mahomes, Herbert. And you know what? I've been really critical of this guy the last year. I still rather have Russell Wilson than Derek Carr. So that's nine right there. Jimmy G, it's like splitting hairs. So we'll give the edge to Derek Carr, I guess. Jalen Hurts with the Eagles, that's 10. Dak Prescott with the Cowboys, that's 11. I got to see more from Daniel Jones before I could put him there. Kirk Cousins, that's 12. You know what? I think a lot of people are going to be surprised by this one. And I know you could say, oh, one-year wonder. But he's been to a Super Bowl. He's now played well in Detroit. I'd rather have Jared Goff than Derek Carr. So that's 13. Fields, it's too young right now, but I would rather have Fields for the next 5 years than Carr. Love, I can't say yet. So I'm at 13 right now, and I got two divisions to go. In the NFC South, Baker, no. Panthers and Falcons, we'll see who their quarterbacks are. 49ers, can't trust their QB situation. Geno's a tough one. Geno had a much better season than Derek Carr. But I don't know where the drop-off is from Geno Smith and where the consistency is going to be. So I'll punt on Geno for now. Matthew Stafford? Yeah, coming off the injury, I'll trust that Matthew Stafford's going to be able to be okay, even though I don't like the direction of that team. And then Kyler Murray, let's figure out when he gets back on the field. So right there, Hickey, that's 14 quarterbacks with some others that are debatable. And by the way, it just kind of shows you, because like last year we had this conversation, I think people would be talking about like 12-ish for Carr. Brady's now out of the league. So that even moved a spot for you to kind of go up the list. But it kind of shows you that some of these other guys have developed, and if they were kind of on that path of with Carr, where you could have them the same conversation at the year that Carr had 2 years ago, those other quarterbacks are moving past them, and Carr went the wrong way this year. I know you could say not all his fault, but great quarterbacks find a way to at least look competent, even in tough situations. And Carr did not look all that competent this past year as a quarterback.
And right at 15, I think it's perfect because you look at his entire career. He's been, I would say, for the most part, consistent. You know what you're going to get. They went to the playoffs twice. One time he was hurt. The other time was in 2021. So he's not a guy that's going to consistently elevate your team to a high level. He's also a guy that, at least for the most part, keeps you in the playoff mix. And the Raiders are not a dumpster fire of being 3-14 because Derek Carr stinks. He's, I think, literally right in the middle. And that's where 15, I think it's kind of perfect and fitting for him.
And last year, I think he would have been higher up on that list. So it kind of shows you he's moving in the wrong direction. This year, Saints, like 9-8 probably. They make the playoffs, and that's pretty much all I could expect out of them. I can't see them doing much better than 9-8, maybe at best 10-7 because of how this NFC is not all that strong. But they have, to me, NFC South champions for now, and I may be talked out of that. Like, let's see the Panthers draft at 1. That's probably the team I would consider right now. Falcons, unless they go into this season with Lamar Jackson, I'm not going to consider them in that spot. You see what Calais Campbell said the other day? He said something along the lines, Hickey, if Desmond Ridder goes the places we think he's going to take us, don't be surprised if we're playing football in January. Now, what that is Calais Campbell, who, when it did not work out at the end with the Ravens, he talked about how much he wanted to go to a winner. And that's him justifying going to the Falcons, where you have a player try to tell you a team's a winner because he could work his way into the argument to justify why he elected to sign there.
It's also easy to say when you haven't seen him play and it's March. So yeah, of course, you know, we can see Desmond Ridder working out, panning, you know, to the highest potential level that we thought he could be in. We'll be in the playoffs for sure. Also easy to say when you're in the worst division in the NFL that it's not that far off from them being in playoff contention.
By the way, totally different topic. And I know we got to get to Terrence Oglesby coming up in about 8 minutes from now as we'll recap the national championship game and this great run of UConn winning games by an average of 20 points in this NCAA tournament. Tonight is one of my favorite nights in sports, Hickey. You have any idea why that is?
Tonight, the night after the national title game, is one of your favorite nights? I have no idea.
Because this means at Augusta National, all the Masters champions that are living, assuming that they're in a good spot to go, go to dinner and you get to see the Masters menu. That, I love it. Now, you're like not a big foodie. You pretend to be a big foodie, Mister. I was making potatoes over the weekend and I cut a piece of my thumb because I was chopping up the potatoes to make French fries, which I don't really buy that story. There's two stories that are out there about you that people are asking questions about behind the scenes. I'm telling you one. I'm asking questions about you with this bandage over your thumb. The other is DA isn't buying that you have the yips, as you said the other night, where you're drinking water and then you're burping on the air. He's not buying that you have the yips, using your justification as why you belched on your overnight show. So there's just some
He's
things
not
being
believing
said about
that you. I didn't turn off my microphone or that I tried to and failed?
No, he just doesn't think you have the yips. You know, from just drinking water and then you're burping from that habitually, he doesn't buy that.
Okay. His loss, I guess, but okay.
I think he believes that was an intentional belch on the air.
All right, believe what you want, DA. That's your choice, man.
Yeah, have a little fun with this. Come on.
No, I don't know why I'd be purposely burping on the air, but all right, let's go with it.
So Scotty Scheffler has his Masters menu out tonight. I actually think this is a kick-ass menu because you would think this is like some big elegant dinner. I like how he didn't go like over the top in just craziness when it comes to food. He starts it off, here are your appetizers. Cheeseburger sliders, delicious. And firecracker shrimp with sweet Thai chili and sriracha mayo. If you're at that dinner, you eating both those? Well, you're weird with seafood, right?
Yeah, I'm not a seafood guy. I crush the sliders.
You stink.
Crush them. And Scotty style, right? Whatever. I don't know what that means, but.
But regardless, how do you not like firecracker shrimp?
Not a shrimp guy. Ugh. More for everyone else.
I'm sorry.
I'll take the sliders.
No, you're not invited to the dinner. Then also some tortilla soup. I have to get mine without avocado because I'm allergic. But it's avocado, crispy blue tortilla strips, sour cream, cilantro, and then lime. Then here's the main course. The two options: Texas ribeye steak or black and red fish, family style mac and cheese, jalapeno cream corn. Mmm, that sounds delicious. Fried Brussels sprouts, and then seasoned fries, which maybe Hickey was making over the weekend, and that's how you almost cut your thumb off. And then finally, for dessert, this is the awesome meal, the awesome part of the meal. A warm chocolate chip skillet cookie, milk and cookies, ice cream. Now that sounds delicious. You think they pregame this dinner?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, come on. You don't think a bunch of rich, famous people aren't getting drunk before this dinner?
Well, don't you want to enjoy it?
Doesn't that help enjoy it, too? It wouldn't surprise some of these golfers, pop a little gummy or something. Especially some of the old heads, pop a little gummy. So when dessert hits, that warm chocolate chip skillet cookie just tastes even better. That wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. It would not shock me, especially the way golfers party, if some pre-activities do happen before this powwow. Anyway, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Terrence Oglesby will join us next. The former Clemson player now does a great job at the Field of 68 as we'll recap this past NCAA season in men's basketball.
Weddings are the celebration of all the details that make a couple perfect for each other. And you can find your perfect fit, too, at Indochino. Choose every detail of a custom-tailored suit, from lapels to linings and more, starting at just $4.99. My bad.
Shh. Sorry.
Find the suit that's perfect for you. Go to Indochino.com and use code PODCAST for 10% off any purchase of $3.99 or more. That's 10% off $3.99 or more at Indochino.com. Code PODCAST.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Recapping the college basketball season. That's weird to say with the body not even dead for 24 hours after UConn does win the national championship last night. The blue blood of UConn does continue with their fifth national championship in program history. So let's recap it with the man that was sitting pretty much courtside for all the action. Does a great job. Field of 68, played for Clemson. And that is Terrence Oglesby, kind enough to join us right now. Terrence, appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just landed back in South Carolina where I live. I'm happy to be back. And you are my last radio hit, so I'm going to take a long nap that will probably last around 48 hours. But all of that being said, Houston was fantastic. I was able to see everybody. And as you know, it's one of the few times of the year where all basketball people are in one spot. So it's always fun. It's always fun to reconnect. And, of course, great to be around good basketball. That always helps.
So what's the meal tonight after a long season of work covering for the Field of 68, Terrence Oglesby? What do you eat tonight before you go to bed?
Well, I drove straight from the airport to my son's baseball game, and I was coaching third base. And apparently if he plays baseball, he gets to pick. So we're at Mellow Mushroom eating pizza tonight. So that's the price you pay when you have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old.
How is pizza out there, just wondering?
It's not like it is in the Northeast, but it serves a purpose. Let's put it that way.
So what's the thought last night? You're sitting there, UConn. I know it got close for a little bit. Then Hawkins hits that big three, and then the game just got out of hand. When you see Danny Hurley and company celebrating on the court, what's going through your mind? What's your thought from the game?
Initially, it was just, man, this was the most dominant performance I've seen in the last 5 or 6 years, at least in my mind. And it's not just the point differential. I think when it comes to the overall body of work and how they just physically beat up every opponent they play. Now, granted, you know, they play Iona in round one. They play St. Mary's in round two. They play Arkansas, who was big but injured, and Eric Musselman in round three. But they just physically imposed their will to whatever they wanted to do throughout the course of the six games that they were playing. This is a UConn team that has a level of toughness that I think is to be commended and given credit to Dan Hurley, who instills his personality within his program and within his players. This team battled the entire time. They had shot making where they needed it. And gosh, I mean, they could just come at you in waves. When you struggle to hit shots, you can bring in Joey Calcaterra, who can come in and knock down some shots. Andre Jackson's figured out how to play despite not being able to shoot. And Adama Sanogo could get wherever he wanted last night when trying to post up. He had such deep seals when catching the ball in the post, and all he had to do was turn around and just lay the ball in. Just physically imposing, physically dominant, and peaking at the right time. That was this UConn team. And you want to talk about blue blood? They are a blue blood. And more national championships than any other program in the last 20-something odd years. This team is elite. The program is elite. And they've won championships over that span with three different coaches. That says a lot about the support of UConn. It says a lot about the program that is UConn.
I thought they were blue blood before this, but I don't even get how anyone would dispute it now.
No, you know what? The only reason there would be any kind of dispute was when they were in the American, which was one of the worst decisions an AD has ever made, to go to the American. And I understand that people are chasing football money, but UConn's a basketball school. It always will be a basketball school. And whenever you got back to your base, you also got back to your recruiting base a little bit. You're able to dive back into those rivalries that once was in the old Big East. Now the new Big East, you're still picking up a lot of those same things. And kids grow up, at least they did whenever I was coming up, they grew up saying, I want to play in the Big East. I grew up saying, I want to play in the ACC, but a lot of the northeastern part of the country, they want to play in the Big East. And that's where UConn's recruiting base is, and that's a good thing now that they're back in that league.
And it's crazy, when you look back at 2013, where we had no clue what direction the Big East was going in, how quickly they've been able to get back as the preeminent conference. We know what Villanova has done. And then you see UConn adding to that party as well. And you know this, in college sports, coaches dominate. The storylines for next year, too, Terrence Oglesby, is going to be off the charts with the coaches in this conference.
Oh, it's going to be unbelievable. You look at St. John's, what they did, bringing in Rick Pitino, we all say, well, how long is Ricky P going to be there? But at the same time, I don't think he's stopping anytime soon, and he has success wherever he goes. It doesn't matter. Slick Rick's going to get it done. And then the crazy thing to me is Ed Cooley taking Georgetown, how much excitement for a program that it was once great to bring in last season, not this season, but last season's Naismith Coach of the Year, somebody who can rebuild quickly, somebody who's terrific in the X's and O's, and somebody who now has immediate access to the DMV area. That's going to be one to watch. You already have Sean Miller, Greg McDermott, and then you had a young coach in Kim English at Providence, who I had the opportunity to call a game between Dayton and George Mason at Dayton, which is an electric venue. And Kimmy English and his guys went in there and got a win just off sheer toughness, offensive play calling, and his guys making plays after he put them in the right spot. He's a rising star in this industry. Providence hit a home run. However, within that league, there's going to be some speed bumps. There's going to be some growing pains. How quickly Providence is going to be really good, we're going to be able to see. It's to be determined, but, man, you have to love the direction that program is going as well.
The other thing for next year with the Big East, we know the Big East tournament was won by Marquette. You look at this Final Four, you see Jim Larrañaga back in a Final Four. He's always going to be remembered for what he did at George Mason. Now he's continued to write just this crazy chapter at Miami. I look at someone like Shaka Smart, who went to the Final Four, as we all know, with VCU, hasn't had a ton of tournament success since. You know, if he could take that next step this upcoming year, because this year, tremendous season, but they came up short in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and it all comes down to seeding, right? Like, who are you going to play when it matters? I believe, I don't have the tournament bracket in front of me. I believe it was Michigan State.
Yeah, it was.
And they ran into a team that was tough as nails and a little bit bigger than them, and really, truth be told, beat them up a little bit. And I think Tyler Kolek's hand injury really bothered him more than what he let on. But Chuck is a great coach. I mean, AP National Coach of the Year. I don't know if you know this, but he actually recruited me to Clemson. So I've known Shaka for the past 20. So he's one of those guys. He's an elite relationship builder. This season, they were an elite offense. At VCU, they were an elite defense. So it's like one of these things where if you have a coach that can adapt to the role that he's in and the job that he's at, you obviously have to be excited about where you are. And here's the thing about Marquette. They have support. They have a fan base that loves basketball. He's in the perfect setting to where he can get the guys that fit him and he can develop them with time and a little bit of patience, quite frankly. That all being said, Marquette's going to return most of their players. That's a preseason top 10 team in college basketball if you look at it right now. Now, it's obviously way too early. Some guys are going to hit the portal. They're going to take some guys in. There's going to be change, but there's change everywhere. I think Shaka has a head start because he takes care of his guys. His guys love to play for him. And a lot of the tournament's about seeding, a lot of the tournament's about matchup, but if you keep putting yourself in position to be in position, eventually you're going to have some success. And he's had success before, and I think he's going to continue to have more success at Marquette.
Terrence Oglesby here with us. Also, last night, Danny Hurley gets his moment. We know about his great basketball family, what Bob did at St. Anthony's, and then what Bobby has done as a player with those two national titles and a Final Four MVP. It was impossible last night to not feel good for Danny Hurley, knowing what everyone has accomplished in his family, to then get his moment in the spotlight.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, if you look at kind of his development of how everything's transpired. I mean, he goes to Seton Hall. He's a good college player, not a great one. His brother Bobby was a great college player. His dad is arguably the greatest high school coach in this country's history. And you can throw some other names in there, but he's certainly in the conversation. And then where's Dan been? Well, Dan's just been chipping away and just continues to work. He's a grinder. He's passionate. He's enthusiastic. And here's the thing about him that people don't really realize when he's on the sideline. He is unbelievably positive when it comes to his guys. He make practice really difficult and then build your guys up when they're in the games. He does that. Does he lose his cool sometimes? Sure. But I'll be honest with you. I thought his performance in the semifinal game against Miami was one of the more impressive coaching performances of the season, regardless of teams that were playing, because you knew Miami was going to make a little bit of a run, and then he was able to stymie it with his bench, and he stuck with his bench at the end of the first half, where a lot of coaches would have been more comfortable with some of their starters. And I understand they're deep and they're talented off their bench and all that, but still, the instant reaction is to get your starting five back in there. He held off. In the second half, Miami was going to make their run of 8 to 10 to 12 points. What did he do? He slowed the ball down. He managed the clock a little bit. He took the air out. He did the basketball equivalent of running the football and taking some clock out, taking some air out of the game, because if they're running 24 to 26 second possessions on offense, that means Miami can't score 6 points in a hurry, 8 points in a hurry. He mitigated their runs by him managing the game. I thought he was terrific. I think he's going to continue to be terrific because guys love to play for him. They love his passion. They love his intensity. And guys are going to stick around. And as long as Connecticut starts to get this NIL thing rolling up in stores, I don't know what's stopping that program.
If I had to put the over-under right now, because he's only 50, of 1.5 more championships, would you take the over or under?
We did the 0.5 last night on Field of 68. I took the over. That's a really tough one just because not many people have gotten multiple championships. But I'm telling you, the recruiting base coupled with his personality, coupled with his ability to manage the game, I think it's not outside the realm of possibility. I would almost venture to take the over, and that's a nuts statement just because of the limited coaches that have done it more than once.
And also, if he does get two more titles, that puts him as the same amount as Calhoun, who we all know created that men's basketball program at UConn.
It's nuts. It's nuts. And, you know, Calhoun, who wasn't able to make the trip to the Final Four, I was feeling a little bit under the weather. Nothing bad, just wasn't feeling great. A legend in his own right. But, you know, his impact, Dan's ability to go and speak with him, to gather thoughts and all that stuff, I think it says a lot about Calhoun's his passion for the university that he coached at and his ability to continue to give forward. I think it's really, really cool. UConn's a special place. Stores is in the middle of nowhere, and the pizza is mediocre. So here's the thing. You have to love Connecticut because they're about hoop and hoop only.
John Fanta had one of those top 25 previews, our buddy John Fanta, way too early. But I thought he made a great point about Florida Atlantic, who he put in at 12. He said, this is a test of the transfer portal. As it sounds, stands, the Owls will return 8 of their 9 rotation pieces that led the program to a historic run to the Final Four. That's going to be fascinating to see how many of those guys from FAU come back, because if you can return 8 of their 9 rotation pieces, you have that ability to run it back to where you were this past year.
Oh, there's no question. And you have the ability to bring in one more bigger body. I mean, think about that, if that's the possibility. But Dusty May alluded to it in the second weekend. He said, hey, our guys are getting recruited right now. That's part of what we're doing right now in college basketball. Everything's going to be in flux. And look, there's not really – when I say recruited, they're not getting recruited directly. They're going through back channels, some of these other coaches. Like, hey, what's this guy going to do? What's that guy going to do? We have NIL available here, there, or wherever. But here's the thing, too, that I think is interesting. Now that there's interest in basketball in Boca Raton, there's money in that part of the country. So I'm curious to see if there's going to be considerable upgrades to their basketball facility. I'd be curious to see if there's an NIL that's put in place, especially after this Final Four run. Dusty May can coach him up. Can he keep him? That's going to be the huge question, as you alluded to.
So you're saying Dusty May has to give a phone call to my 92-year-old grandmother who lives in Boca Raton. Hit her up for some money?
That's exactly right. Could you imagine? Could you imagine if FAU would have won the championship, the wheelchair parade that would have gone down the main street of Boca? Are you kidding me? Elite level wheelchair parade. I think it's really cool. What a job Dusty May's done. He's going to get a contract extension. It's going to be pretty hefty. I'm happy for him. Really, really quality human being.
Terrence Oglesby, last thing I'll ask you before I let you go take a nap that is well deserved. How did you react to this entire Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark situation? 9.9, I think it was, million people tuning in to watch that game. And I think the reaction is a lot of an overreaction, but how'd you kind of process it?
I'm with you. It's an overreaction. Here's the thing. I had this conversation with somebody who was sitting beside on the plane today. It's like the women's game over the past 10 years has improved exponentially. Leaps and bounds. It's not as concentrated anymore where it's UConn, Tennessee, South Carolina, and that's it, and pepper in one or two other teams. There's some more parity in the women's game. And not only that, women's college basketball is a little bit more regional as far as recruiting is concerned. Like, most of those girls on Iowa's team were from Iowa. Most of those girls on South Carolina's team were up and down the East Coast. I think it's cool to see. And here's the thing, too. These are high, high, high-level athletes. There's going to be trash talk. That's part of what makes these athletes as good as what they are at the level of what they are, is their mental toughness, is their ability to go to the next play. To me, it was such a non-issue. I didn't understand why it was such a big deal. Reese is a heck of a player. She was the number two recruit in her class coming out of high school. It didn't work out at Maryland. She goes down to LSU. It goes well. Good for her. That's a tough girl. Caitlin Clark, here's the thing. She's talked trash the entire time. That's par for the course. That is a standard when it comes to elite level athletes. She is no lamb that needs to be protected by anybody. Like, this is a tough young woman. She is a talented young woman. If she gives it, she can take it, and vice versa. April Reese, the same way. You talk trash, it goes both sides. You win, you get to talk a little bit more trash. That's the benefit of winning, right? To me, it was seen as such a non-issue, and it, really the argument came down to people who just, quite frankly, didn't play the game and don't understand the nuance of what that is. That's two competitive people playing extremely hard when the stakes are at their highest in women's college basketball, and it made for great theater, and people need to appreciate it for what it was.
He's Terrence Oglesby. Terrence, really have enjoyed your coverage all throughout the year on Field of 68, especially the last 2 weeks. Thanks so much for doing this. You be well.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Let's hear this Mike Florio report. Now, there's been two. The first one we've talked about, and that was Mike Florio reporting today that this offseason Bill Belichick was shopping around Mac Jones, and some of the potential destinations during the offseason were the Raiders, Texans, Buccaneers, and Commanders. But here is Mike Florio via his own show on Pro Football Talk saying there was some talks of the Vikings trading Kirk Cousins to the 49ers.
Apparently, at the scouting combine, there was some chatter, there was some noise among people within the broader league structure, not media, but people in the league, about Cousins being traded to the 49ers. That was a hot topic at one point in Indianapolis. And, you know, at this point, Cousins has redone his deal. It's a $38 million cap charge. But you know what? If you're going to swap out Kirk Cousins, you bring in a guy who's under a low-cost contract like a Trey Lance. Trey Lance, North Dakota State, close to home, gets a chance to resurrect his career.
So here's the thing. We have now, on multiple times, have heard about Kyle Shanahan, constant belief in Kirk Cousins. We know what they've done before together. And how much Kyle Shanahan has thought about getting Kirk Cousins to the 49ers. At this rate, Hickey, and I actually think this deal's not going to happen, but if Kirk Cousins went to the 49ers, Kirk Cousins could win a Super Bowl, as crazy as it seems in terms of not believing in Kirk Cousins in a big spot. But with that team with the 49ers, we saw Jimmy G almost win a Super Bowl there. And Kirk Cousins, a better quarterback than Jimmy G. But you know what just annoys me with this whole Kyle Shanahan thing? He just doesn't know what he wants. You trade up to 3 with what seems like no plan. You were talked into drafting Trey Lance. Now you're pretty much ready to give up on Trey Lance, who's barely played. Brock Purdy, you think you could win a Super Bowl with him. You thought you could win a Super Bowl or do well with Nick Mullins, right? Like, how crazy is this? Garoppolo, one moment you want him. The next moment you don't. Then you want him again. This guy is a very good coach. Don't get me wrong. His teams have been really damn good. He's been to a Super Bowl as a head coach. He's been to 2 other NFC title games. But until you figure out what you want and what's going to work at the quarterback position, this one guy in, one guy out, all right, we're going to have this guy 1 month, the next guy the next month, that does not result in winning a Super Bowl in this league. I know he's gotten really close, very close, but until he figures out his QB long term, he's not winning a Super Bowl in this league. And here's the thing. This has been a team now for the last 4 or 5 years that has been close. You know how windows last in the NFL? I don't know how much longer the window is for this group with the 49ers. Like, they're going to be really great this year, that you would think. But I don't know if it's more than 2-3 years from now. They got to figure out the McCaffrey deal. They figured out Debo, right? A lot of people thought that was fractured beyond repair this time last year. Defensively, you got contracts that you have to continue to give out. So you got pieces where you should be good for a while, but it's more than just being good now. You have to be elite. You have to be number one. And until they give me more clarity on the future of their quarterback position, I think they keep on getting close. And then not knowing what direction they want to go to with quarterback is going to continue to bite them in the you-know-what. And that's been my problem with Kyle Shanahan, is it seems like it's so selective. Like, pretty, you know, it's not even year to year. It's like month to month with this guy at the quarterback position. And that's bonkers that he's been able to have that much success without really knowing what he wants at a quarterback.
Shows you how good of a coach he is, especially offensively. But it's also frustrating because it's not only he doesn't really know who in terms of quarterback he wants, but it's also like the style you want. If you want Kirk Cousins, you're not going to have this star-studded offense you have because you can't fit Kirk Cousins on your salary with Debo, with George Kittle, with Christian McCaffrey, with all these great pieces, with Trent Williams. Like, the 49ers have the luxury of paying top dollar at almost every other position on the field, because they valued this, and you know, we're going to go for Trey Lance. Then when Trey Lance got hurt, we're going to go for Brock Purdy. And you have quarterbacks on dirt cheap contracts. You can pay everyone else around you, and you can afford to make a Christian McCaffrey trade because your quarterback's getting nothing.
And got rid of Garoppolo, who's cost you the most money at the position.
Right, and now you want to, add Trey Lance and Brock Purdy together and probably times that by like 100 to get him to match what Kirk Cousins you're going to owe him in 2023. And again, the math doesn't work. Then you have to take other pieces off. And do you really want to be coaching a team then?
Well, the only thing is that I'll say
everything at your disposal.
So Kirk's pretty much been like on 1-year contracts. I know he's got the 3-year deal for Minnesota. if that was for this year, Kirk has 1 year left on that contract, I'm pretty sure, then you could probably find a way to make it work in the salary cap by tacking on like other years or void years with all the confusion there. There's still money that you got to give them, and it's going to be a big increase. But I bet you they could find a way to make it work for the interim where it's okay, we're going all for it to go win a Super Bowl. But I just look at this right now. When your leader does not know what he wants at the quarterback position, which is the most important position in your sport and in all of sports, I don't think you find a way to get over the hump and walk away with the Lombardi Trophy until you know what you're actually doing with the quarterback position. And would it shock you whatsoever if this year Brock Purdy's the guy for a month and then Brock Purdy, right? It hits midnight for Cinderella and then they're back to Trey Lance in October. Like, that wouldn't shock me whatsoever. And that's what I think could continue to happen here, where it's just a rotating carousel of guys that Kyle's basically just saying, it's my system, it's going to work. All right, it's worked into getting you guys in the playoffs and doing damage in the playoffs. But it has not worked to the level of winning it all. And you've been really damn close. You got to a Super Bowl. You got to two other NFC title games. And you go through all three of them, quarterback play failed them. I know Jimmy G outplayed Mahomes for the first three quarters. And the fourth quarter couldn't make the big throw. When you take a glance this past year, Brock Purdy got hurt. The year before that, you can't find a way to get it done in the fourth quarter with the lead up against the Rams. They keep on getting really close, but you got to get the guy at the quarterback position or you're going to continue to get burned by it. And I don't think he believes in anyone right now, really, that he has on the roster. Alex Myers next to preview the Masters.